Welcome to the Medical Journal of Australia podcast. The MJA is Australia's top peer-reviewed general medical journal, publishing groundbreaking research to the medical community since 1914. My name is Kate Swanell, and I am the MJA's news and online editor. It's been 14 years since Thiessen and Burick's landmark study into psychiatric disorders in homeless men and women in inner Sydney. Since then, changes in the circumstances of vulnerable Australians, including the cost of housing, the availability of illegal drugs, and changes in mental health services, have prompted a new study by a large group of researchers in Sydney and Newcastle. Lead author of the research, which can be found at www.mja.com.au and is permanently open access, is Professor Olav Nielsen, Professor of Psychiatry at Macquarie University. He is my special guest on the pod today. Why did you decide this research needed doing? What was missing from the knowledge?
Well, look, the last big study of homelessness in Sydney was done about 20 years ago. It was a landmark study by, you know, Thiessen and Burick in the late 90s. And a lot of the circumstances had changed. You know, the housing, the cost of housing, the arrangement of mental health service, the kind of substance use, and so for all those reasons, it needed to be updated, I think.
Yeah. In what way have, I mean, you mentioned the housing. How has the housing market changed for, the housing situation changed for people who are vulnerable to becoming homeless?
Well, I think it's no secret that housing in Sydney's become pretty dear, but in particular, the kinds of boarding houses that were previously where a lot of people with mental illness, for example, were housed, have been closed down by, you know, for fire safety and just for gentrification, you know, because they're often in Victorian mansions that now house one family, previously had 30 people.
Yes. Hasn't there been more public housing opened up, though, or is that a bit of a myth?
No, it has. The housing department's great. I mean, there's obviously the supply doesn't equal demand, but it's, you know, they're pretty good in prioritising housing for the people mentally ill. But what we found, which is interesting, was that people with severe mental illness couldn't keep their tenancies. 21% of our sample had previously held a housing department tenancy and had lost it, which shows that just unsupported tenancy isn't enough. You need other kinds of supports.
Yes. Is it a bit of a chicken and egg thing? Do we know, does severe mental illness cause problems holding onto housing, or does homelessness cause severe mental illness? Do you know what I mean? Is there kind of a vicious circle going on with these people who are homeless and mentally ill and struggling in every other kind of way?
Yeah, well there is. It's firstly, there's definitely the egg, you know, in the sense that being severely mentally ill makes it much more likely that you won't have the living skills to hang on to tenancy, to pay your bills, and to even, you know, charm the estate agent to give you the key, but also if you're homeless and haven't got a fixed place to go, it's very hard to provide consistent treatment for mental illness. So, for example, to be in regular contact with the community health centre and to get, for example, your injections, and the propensity to use substances is greater when you're homeless. It's very demoralising, and not much else to do. So, it is a chicken and egg, and it's a vicious cycle for many people. And, you know, if you add imprisonment, because 30% of our sample had come out of jail, you're looking at a pretty disadvantaged underclass.
Let's talk a little bit about the people coming out on prison release. Are there things that need to be done to improve the way we let people out of prison? Are we preparing them enough? Are we giving them enough support when they walk out?
Well, the short answer is no, the longer answer is that there's a disproportionate number of people with severe mental illness in jail, all sorts of mental illnesses, but in particular schizophrenia, and they, of course, are often released from low security jails with a single social security check, and quite often without a proper arrangement for ongoing medical care. So we find people turn up at in the homeless sector, and they haven't been given supply of medication. There's been no arrangement as to where they're going to spend the next night. So, in short, they're not getting, or the existing programs are providing consistent support, put it that way.
Yeah. Now, you found like 66% of the people you and the data you analysed suggested they had high rates of substance use disorders. Are we talking alcohol? Are we talking illicit drugs? What exactly are we looking at?
Look, we're talking about everything, really. Yeah. A lot of illegal drug use, but alcohol's the biggest and the most common, and it's cheapest, you know. So I think alcohol's on top. But 66% is substance use disorder. I mean, substance use probably is 80% of the sample. It's a huge comorbidity. And if you add tobacco, tobacco...
I was going to ask you about
that. 85% in our sample. Yeah, so there's poly substance use is common.
I thought making tobacco and cigarettes more expensive was supposed to help people get off cigarettes.
Yeah, well, you know, we've done a separate study on smoking, and we provide nicotine replacement, and we have a smoking abatement clinic. Mm. Only one out of 145 of our attenders actually gave up for a year. So
wow.
So it's difficult. And I have heard anecdotally from people that they'd rather sleep in the open than not have money for cigarettes. So putting it up putting the price up doesn't help the homeless. It might help the, reduce smoking in the wider community.
Wow. Now I can't hear you. That was a big gust of wind. No, that's all right. You're back again, which is good. If you had a magic wand, Olav, what would you want to do, first of all?
Well, look, I'm already working on it, really, is to get together with some NGOs and financial types to build purpose-built housing for people with mental illness. My main concern is people with severe mental illness, which is half of our sample. Mm. That's schizophrenia. It's a clinic sample, not a homeless census. But
yes.
Those censuses show about a third of people sleeping in the open have schizophrenia, so it's not totally unrepresentative. So what I do is have purpose-built, supported housing with medical services on site. It has to be in clusters. People have to be, protected from exploitation and mm-hmm. And provided with just a little bit of basic support, a little bit more than you get in a housing department flat.
Yeah. Do you know what the cost of a cluster of those kind of houses would be?
Oh, yes, you could probably do it for $25,000 per person per head, or about $500 a week. Which I understand the housing department do pay even more than that to rent stock, unsupported stock. So it'd be hugely cost saving to the community because the homeless mentally ill have been shown in other studies to cost the community more than $100,000 a year in use of other services, especially. State services, health, hospital admission, imprisonment, justice. So it's just a no-brainer. It's the trouble is, of course, that the costs and the savings aren't, held by the same department, so they haven't rushed this plan,
Is that the big barrier, or are there other barriers to government making moves on this?
Look, I think, the slowness to respond to problems. Just the one they want to do everything on a very big scale. I mean, they do have affordable housing plans, but I don't think it necessarily includes this kind of treatment that I think would be optimal. But I'm hoping we'll get some attention and this publication and we'll demonstrate the problem and perhaps get a little bit of support.
Are we even treating people with the right amount of compassion? Let alone providing practical solutions for them.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm trying to interest people by just talking about self-interest of saving money, but of course it's the ultimate goal is to help people live better lives. I mean, for very little input, you could really improve people's lives and their physical health a lot, and it is a little bit disgraceful that we're such a wealthy society that we're not doing a bit more. But the sheer preponderance of people with severe mental illness who've drifted into this, very sad situation and that it's comorbidity. There's often more problem. It's substance use and mental illness and social disadvantage and the lot combined.
Thanks, Olav. I really appreciate your time.
All right, lovely talking to you.
My thanks to my special guest today. Don't forget that all our podcasts are open access and available at www.mja.com.au/podcasts. Or you can subscribe to our feed at iTunes. My name's Kate Swanell, and we'll see you next time.